This is the Durham Museum Podcast, and I am your curator, Carrie Meyer. Byron Reed was a man of many professions, land surveyor, real estate agent, and coin collector. He was at the forefront of Omaha's founding and played a significant role in its history. However, outside the circles of coin collecting, very few people know anything about Byron Reed. In this episode, we'll delve into the story of Reed, how he made his millions, and explore the hidden gems of his storied collection. Welcome, everyone, to the Durham Museum Podcast. I'm your curator, Carrie Meyer, and today we're going to spend some time exploring my favorite part of the Durham Museum, the Byron Reed Collection. It's my hope that by the end of our time, you'll have a better picture about how interesting and eclectic our friend Byron Reed was. He is responsible for not only amassing an incredible coin collection that is known around the country, but also procuring documents and books that have incredible information of historic value. And it all sits, relatively unknown, here in a vault in Omaha, Nebraska. So first off, who was Byron Reed? Born March 12, 1829 in New York, Reed's ancestry can be traced to Mr. William Reed, R-E-A-D-E, a Puritan who arrived in the colonies in 1635 on board the ship Defense. He had six brothers and sisters and only an eighth grade education, but he was, however, an avid reader and musician, and he played the violin proficiently. At 16, Reed taught himself Morse code, became a telegraph operator on the Cleveland Pacific Railroad lines. In 1855, Reed went to Leavenworth, Kansas as a correspondent for the New York Tribune. This was during the height of the Border Ruffian Wars, or Bleeding Kansas, on the eve of the Civil War, and Tribune correspondents in Leavenworth and other pro-slavery places were in great danger. Reed's anti-slavery columns so enraged locals that when his connection with the Tribune was discovered, his arrest was ordered, and he narrowly escaped Leavenworth at night. Unfortunately, another correspondent was discovered and hung. Reed settled in Omaha in 1856 and began working as a telegraph operator until he founded the Byron Reed Company, the first real estate company in Omaha. In 1862, he and several other gentlemen who all happened to live in the same boarding house were courting a very eligible young lady named Mary Melissa Perkins. Miss Perkins was a bit conflicted about which suitor's proposal of marriage to accept, so she asked the proprietress of the boarding house for her opinion. The lady thought about this and eventually declared, "Byron Reed, he'll make the most money." So Byron and Mary Melissa were married, and at the time he was 33 and she was 15. Within a year, the Reeds had a daughter, Anna Maria, and in 1865, they welcomed a son, Abraham Lincoln Reed. The Civil War was, in fact, the most impactful event in Reed's life, by his own admission. However, he did not join the Union Army and was able to buy his way out of service. The collection contains a passport granted to Reed so he could travel across the Union lines without being harassed. This document identifies him to be a resident of Douglas County, Nebraska, 35 years of age, 5 feet 8 inches tall, with blue eyes, brown hair, and having dark whiskers. It states he has proper authority to travel between New York and Nebraska for a period of 50 days. If Reed were caught traveling beyond the duration of the passport, he would be presumed a spy and arrested. Byron Reed's life was very notable in the history of Omaha. He donated 14 acres of land for Prospect Hill Cemetery, surveyed it, and laid it out for the city. He was city clerk from 1860 to 67, deputy county clerk from 1861 to 63, county clerk from 63 to 65, a member of the city council in 1871, and its president in 1872. He was one of the first auditors for the newly established First National Bank of Omaha, and the original charter for the bank was signed in his home. In 1890, he served on the President's Assay Commission, which was a commission of public citizens formed to test the quality of American coinage, and operated from 1837 until 1977. Reed considered this one of the most important positions he held in his life. The Reed Mansion at 25th and Dodge Streets, built in 1875 and known as the Mansion on the Hill, was acquired by Father Flanagan to serve as the first boys' town in 1917. Byron Reed was one of the largest owners of real estate in Omaha and one of its wealthiest citizens, and he used that wealth to begin building his collection in the early 1870s. There's a letter in the collection that gives insight into one of the ways Reed did this. The sender of the letter is a Mr. E.F. Test, who has been showing up more and more in the collection as a requesting source for materials in Reed's library. Test was himself a clerk for Union Pacific, but he was well-educated and apparently took great interest in acquiring pieces for Reed. This letter is interesting because it gives insight into how Reed was able to accumulate his library, and also because of the signature, Benjamin Harrison. This is none other than the very soon-to-be-elected president of the United States, Benjamin Harrison. Now stay with me here. In the letter to E.F. Test, soon-to-be-elected President Benjamin Harrison writes that he is happy to provide an official letter from Governor Benjamin Harrison of Virginia to be included in Reed's library. This Governor Benjamin Harrison was a planter and patriot of Virginia, a delegate to the First and Second Continental Congresses, and a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He was also the father of President William Henry Harrison and great-grandfather of our soon-to-be-elected President Benjamin Harrison, who had written this letter to E.F. Test. So this gives us insight because it's an example of the Victorian practice of soliciting letters and autographs from famous people to build private collections. This is one of the ways that Byron Reed gathered his documents. Now, if that weren't confusing enough, I have yet to find the 18th century document that this letter refers to. So the mysteries of Byron Reed's collection just keep going. Sadly, Byron Reed died on June 6, 1891 at the age of 62. At his death, he was considered the wealthiest man in Nebraska with an estate valued at $2.5 million, which is $70.3 million today. Through his will, which he signed 2 days prior to his death, Reed provided a lot of land at the corner of 19th and Harney Streets to the city of Omaha, upon which they were to build a library building to hold the contents of Reed's incredible collection. It's about 17,000 pieces at the time of his death. The building and the collection were to, quote, forever thereafter be used and displayed for the benefit of the public by the city of Omaha, end quote. This building was completed in 1898 and designed by famed Omaha architect Thomas Kimball. Today, Byron Reed's collection is still owned by the city of Omaha, but the Durham Museum has served as its repository since the 1980s. As I've had the pleasure to care for these wonderful pieces, I've uncovered a number of gems, and I only have time to tell a few of the thousands of stories today. And we'll start with just a couple of the Omaha pieces. First, there are a number of letters from 1886 to 1890 related to a double block of land at 16th and Dodge Streets in downtown. Locals will know this as the location of the Doubletree Hotel, but it was previously the location of the beautiful Richardsonian Romanesque post office building, built in 1898 and demolished in 1966. This land was owned by the Folsom family of Council Bluffs, Iowa, and it was eventually passed to one of the Folsom daughters, Frances. Most of you probably know Frances, but for an entirely different reason. On June 2, 1886, Frances was married in the Executive Mansion in Washington, D.C. to none other than President Grover Cleveland. The letters in the Byron Reed collection pertain to the Clevelands paying taxes on this land and documenting its sale to build the post office. The land was sold in 1890, and the Cleveland portion of the sale proceeds were $6,322.96, which is about $178,000 today. Byron Reed served many other first families as real estate agent. His collection contains letters from President Rutherford B. Hayes about his various parcels of land in the city, and Reed managed the rentals and looked after the needs of the tenants. Now, one of these renters was operating a saloon, and generally this was a lucrative business operation, and most landowners would have had no issue. But President Hayes had run on a teetotaler platform and was a hero of the temperance movement. And when an unsympathetic reporter broke the story, it turned into a national scandal. Hayes was hugely embarrassed and blamed, you guessed it, Byron Reed for renting to such an unfortunate tenant. Reed pointed out that Hayes had been collecting the rent for several months and had yet to raise an issue with the propriety of its origins. Beyond these very interesting local stories, there are also a number of documents and stories related to significant national events found in Byron Reed's collection. Among them is a two-page letter, written in English, from Edouard Laboulaye. Now, if you've seen National Treasure 2, you probably already know Edouard Laboulaye. He is most associated with designing the Statue of Liberty. And this document, written in 1875, is a press release of sorts. It's written to the editor of the Richmond Daily Whig to announce France's intention to give a gift to the United States of America in celebration of its centennial anniversary, and includes a photograph of a rendering of the statue. The Statue of Liberty would not be completed until 1886, but this press release and others like it ensured the American people had some idea of what was being constructed in New York Harbor. Another document in the collection features a portrait of Sam Houston, then president of the Republic of Texas. The portrait has a 75-cent banknote glued to the top of the paper. Prior to becoming part of the United States, Texas was its own country. As such, it needed to finance operations and issued paper banknotes that Texans could purchase and which the government would redeem with hard currency at a future date. Sam Houston's government was very meticulous about destroying redeemed banknotes so they could not be reused to take more money from the treasury than was owed to the populace. Consequently, some denominations of these notes are very rare. This unassuming banknote in Byron Reed's collection is the only Republic of Texas 75-cent note known to still exist today. And we can't forget the coins. Among the almost 3,500 artifacts in that portion of the collection are a sixpence, a threepence, and a shilling from the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which was founded in 1630. These silver coins are of the oak tree variety of Massachusetts silver and are so named because they depict an oak tree on the obverse, or front of the coin. It also has Massachusetts written around the edge. These are hand-struck coins, so they're not as pristinely circular as the coins we use today, and they are fairly thin and light. On the back of the coin is the date 1652 and New England written around the edge. So you're probably thinking, what kind of story could possibly be so interesting about a couple of coins? Well, these coins were minted in the Massachusetts colony from 1652 to 1682 because the colonial merchants were tired of losing money to foreign trading partners using different forms of currency where the weights and true silver or gold content couldn't be determined. The Massachusetts General Court thus mandated that all foreign currency was to be melted down and remade into the official currency of the colony. Therefore, these coins were some of the first to be minted in North America. But as all good stories go, there's a twist. See, Massachusetts was an English colony, and as such, all currency and its minting was closely controlled by the English government. In this case, Parliament and King Charles II. Charles II had a few other things to worry about in 1652, like reestablishing royal power following the Republic of Oliver Cromwell, who had incidentally beheaded Charles I, Charles II's father, so he really didn't care what Massachusetts was doing. At first. That changed in 1682. Charles reasserted his royal privilege to regulate the coinage of the realm and close the mint. His successor, King James II, formally abolished the mint in 1686, and it took 110 years, a war, and a literal act of Congress for the second mint in America, the United States Mint, to be established in 1792. While Byron Reed is most known for his coin collection today, he also collected a lot of books, many of which are incredibly rare. This is just one story from the over 1,600 in the collection. There is a book in the collection titled The Genuine Book, published in 1813, and its story is a doozy. It chronicles an investigation conducted by the advisors of King George III of England related to the conduct of his daughter-in-law, Princess Caroline of Wales, and she was accused of some pretty racy stuff. See, Caroline was formerly Caroline of Brunswick, a cousin of George, Prince of Wales, who would eventually become King George IV. Well, Prince George had a few problems. First, he was illegally married to Maria Fitzherbert, his longtime companion and a Catholic. His father had not consented to the marriage, and if he had, Prince George would have lost his place in the succession because the King of England, as head of the Church of England, couldn't marry a Catholic. Second, Prince George had a lot of debt due to his ostentatious lifestyle and needed to marry and furnish the country with an heir. So he and Caroline were engaged, sight unseen, in 1794 and married in 1795. But George did not find his new bride in any way attractive. Once their daughter, Princess Charlotte of Wales, was born, George informed Caroline she could do as she liked as he would not be having relations with her again. Rejected by her husband, Caroline went to live at Blackheath, London, where her behavior reportedly became a little extreme, and it was rumored she'd had an illegitimate child with one of her lovers. A royal commission was set up called The Delicate Investigation, and this book in the Byron Reed collection is the chronicle of that investigation. It contains witness statements, letters to the king, and other private papers documenting the commission's findings. Now, why, you may ask, did the palace allow this to be published? Well, truth is, they didn't. The story goes that this book was one massive public relations leak from the palace. The book was immediately bought up and suppressed after only a few copies were issued. People were paying as much as £1,500 to get a copy. That's $120,000 per book in today's money. So far, I've only found three other copies of this book. Two are in England and one is in Australia. After all this investigating, the Royal Commission declared that not enough evidence existed to prove the charges against Caroline. In 1814, she moved to Italy, but rumors of her escapades continued and access to her daughter was restricted. She had so little contact that she found out through a passing courier that her daughter, Charlotte, had died in childbirth in 1817. George, who was still her husband, didn't have the heart to write her of the news himself. George remained determined to rid himself of Caroline and introduced another bill of divorce to Parliament in 1820 after he had ascended the throne as King George IV. Caroline returned to England that same year, determined to take her place as queen. She was wildly popular with the British people, her husband was widely loathed, and thus Parliament decided to dismiss the bill. Still, George barred her from their 1821 coronation. Caroline fell ill soon after and died 3 weeks later. London went into a state of abject mourning at the news of her death. Her body was buried in her native Brunswick, and on her coffin was inscribed, "Caroline, the injured Queen of England." These are but a few of the many stories contained in the Byron Reid collection. I find that so often with these named collections, you lose the identity of the person who brought them all together. These stories and the many more yet untold reach to far-flung places and times, yet they're all here, in Omaha, brought together by one man who had a love and passion for history and who wanted to make sure that it was made available to those who came after him. I know I can speak on behalf of all of us at the Durham Museum that it is my pleasure to care for these artifacts and to share some of their stories with you to fulfill Byron Reid's final wish that these items are forever and thereafter used and displayed for the benefit of the people of Omaha. Thank you all for joining us today. I'm your curator, Carrie Meyer, and I'll look forward to sharing more Omaha history with you next time on the Durham Museum Podcast.
The Durham Museum is located at 801 South 10th Street in Omaha, Nebraska. Visit us online at durhammuseum.org.
A Parkville Media Production.